Travelcast, episode 499. The Travelcast is an audio fiction podcast magazine that brings strange stories by strange authors to strange listeners, such as yourself. I'm your host, Norm Sherman. Great original Travelcast story for you folks this week by Kay Vandal, called Nowhere. Kay is a coastal ecologist and weird fiction writer. Her works appeared in Seize the Press, Dark Matter, and anthologies including This World Belongs to Us and Death's Other Kingdom, Horror Tales of World War I. So without further ado, we bring you Nowhere by Kay Vandal. The blue men live where they put John Brown's corpse, which is to say, nowhere. Nowhere is a cave under Charlestown, West Virginia, which used to be Charlestown, Virginia. The West Virginians who presided over John Brown's execution told the newspapers this. His corpse would ride to New York with a noose still around his neck, in a wooden box nailed shut, and the train that carried the coffin whistled to the mothers of the North that this was a preamble to a whole lot more coffins. Really, the box was empty. They put the corpse in the cave to feed the blue men. But the blue men in Nowhere didn't just eat John Brown's corpse. They picked it apart and used it for all sorts of things. His hair became a net for catching scrawny, eyeless fish in the pools of Nowhere. His flesh fertilized fungus gardens, and his bones became tools, and his clothes adorned the kings of Nowhere for generations. "I am worth inconceivably more to hang than for any other purpose," said John Brown before he was hanged. John Brown's noose, which they did leave round his neck, became six rungs in the rope ladder to the crack that went up the cave wall, winding toward the surface. 1 century after the deposition of that first corpse, the rope ladder made from nooses toward the crack in the sky dangles near completion. The newly elected king, John Brown VI, remembers their lost brothers, as is customary, in his inauguration speech. What isn't customary is that he promises retribution for all blue men. His election, of course, wouldn't be possible but for the writings of John Brown I, whose death sustained the people with tiny eyeless fish, tools, fungus, rugs, etc. The least the blue men could do was read the text shoved in his pockets, scrawled on his hands. The kings of Nowhere would be democratically elected henceforth, decreed John Brown II, the first blue John Brown, in honor of John Brown I. "Are we men?" asks his scribe after the speech. "Of course," says John Brown VI. The writings say men up there have dangly things," says Scribe, "which hang from between their legs, and women don't." "Well, we're women then," says John Brown VI. "Women up there have round bits on their chests, with buttons in the middle." John Brown VI looks down at his chest, flat and blue under the tattered remains of his brown John Brown shirt. "This is why they hate us," says an ancient blue man, who was there 100 years ago when the first blue man was slain.
"They hate us because we came here from there,"
says another blue man, pointing down.
"It doesn't matter why they hate us," says the first one. "Only that they do."
"For which we'll have our retribution," says John Brown VI. "I suppose it doesn't matter to you that we need another rung," says Scribe, elbowing him. "Anything to get elected, eh, John? What would John say?"
John Brown VI only smiles. The early days of John Brown VI's presidency proceed with sleepy normality among the blue men. Scribes read and write. The ancients complain. Fishermen catch scraggly eyeless bundles, which they dry in the crescent of light. They're careful not to let the crescent touch their skin. Some of the most ancient ancients carry burn scars from the old days, when there was an opening at ground level, and the dappled light of the forest reached into Nowhere. When the fish dry, they cut them open with fingernails and rusty bread knives. On the fourth day of John Brown VI's presidency, he approaches Scribe while the others sleep. Scribe snorts awake from his spot on the floor. John Brown VI hands him a knife and holds out his arm.
"What is this?" says Scribe.
John Brown VI says, "The final rung." Scribe laughs. John Brown VI says, "My blood will do vastly more towards advancing the cause I've earnestly endeavored to promote than all I have done in my life before." Which is what John Brown I said before they killed him. For many centuries, Nowhere's exit led to a hillside pine grove. Kind outsiders used to deliver fish with eyes and bushels of maize to the blue men, their cousins who couldn't step into the sun. The kind outsiders stopped coming after apocalypse unfurled across the land like rugs, disease and explosions and screams that carried deep into Nowhere. Piece by piece, the apocalypse came for the forest, too. Then, somebody poured concrete around the opening in the woods and built a bakery on top. The baker, a skinny, pale man with a thick mustache, intended to use the cavern as a cellar. When he found it occupied, he wasn't angry. He dropped cupcakes into the cave some days, which were the sweetest things the blue men had ever tasted. Other days, he dropped baskets of books and newspapers about all sorts of things, mostly God and Chestertown and the Civil War and the apocalypse, before it which the new outsiders celebrated each year, twice a year. Once in a while, he let white men dressed in gray trudge into the basement, and they'd push inside the opening the bodies of men wearing blue, full of holes or wearing nooses, which became rungs. One night, a blue man, young and brash, snuck up out of the basement, into the bakery, and onto the street, and the town roiled in disgust. They chased him down and beat him with sticks and rocks and shoved a bayonet in his chest. They pushed his swollen body through the hole in the bakery, and the baker's body too, bruised and bloodied in exchange for keeping such a disgusting secret. The state, West Virginia by then, also knew of the hole under Chestertown and the blue men inside it on account of its fantastic use as a corpse disposal chute for folks whose bodies might otherwise get martyred or incite riots.
"We have heard the reports of a sexless blue humanoid," said West Virginia, "and we assure the people of Chestertown that it was a Halloween prank."
The bricklayer was sloppy. Sometimes mortar falls into the cave. Sometimes from holes between bricks spill crescent-shaped prisms of light, illuminating fungus gnats and steam. Sometimes it lasts for hours, sometimes only seconds. The opening, the blue men are sure, can be widened with fingernails and bread knives, if only they can reach it. Scribe approaches John with a knife. John Brown VI squeezes his eyes shut, clenches his fist, prepares to feel his arms separate at the shoulder joint. With a slice, Scribe cuts off John Brown VI's tattered, honorary, sacred John Brown shirt. John Brown VI snaps his eyes open. The cold, damp air tickles his chest, which had grown used to being covered. Scribe holds the shirt. He says, "I can turn this into rope." The next time a tiny crescent appears on the floor, the rope is finished. Scribe ties the shirt rope in place near the crack in the sky, dodging the incoming light. He descends back to the cave floor, eyes watery and red. 33 blue men, which is all blue men, scribes and stonemasons and fungus gardeners and fishermen and ancients, stare at him.
"What was it like?" says a scribe.
"Bright," says scribe.
"Bright?"
says a fisherman, whose mouth moves like he's sounding out one of the harder words in the text, dexterous or phosphorescent. Scribe laughs.
"All right then, John," he says. "Up you go, yeah? Let's see some of the retribution, why don't we? Bring us back a human corpse or two."
The others chatter in agitation.
"A human corpse," someone mutters to someone. "Like the old days. We won't have to fertilize the fungus with our waste a minute longer," says a fungus gardener.
John Brown VI smooths down his brown John Brown pants and puts his foot on the lowest rung of the ladder.
"Now hold on," says an ancient.
John Brown VI stills. Scribe rolls his eyes.
We ought to wait until the light's gone," says the ancient. "We can't risk our John Brown burning through and through so soon in his tenure."
Murmurs of agreement spread through the crowd. Scribe hears other scribes giggle, and his cheeks feel hot, purpled with blood.
"Yeah, besides," says another ancient, "we shouldn't be after human corpses. We should be after cupcakes."
Even John Brown VI feels drool pool under his tongue, so long on fish and fungus that he barely remembers the taste of anything else. Beside him, Scribe rolls his eyes again. Scribe was a tiny blue baby when the state sealed the hole in the bakery. When cupcakes arrived, they were distributed based on seniority, as with all things in Nowhere. Scribe, who has never had cupcakes, says,
"If I may ask respectfully, kind sir, where is the retribution in cupcakes?"
The blue men grow agitated. Cupcakes versus corpses becomes the topic of the afternoon, and no one gets any work done. The fungus thirsts for urine. The fish swim uninhibited in clear, still pools. John Brown VI announces, after hours of argument, that there will be a vote. The blue men sit crisscross on the floor. They close their eyes and bow their heads. John Brown VI tells the group, "May he who desires corpses raise his hand." John Brown VI counts 16 hands. "May he who desires cupcakes raise his hand." John Brown the Sixth counts 16 hands. John Brown the Sixth announces sadly to his constituents, "We are at an impasse." Scribe jumps to his feet.
"It occurred to me while we were voting, John," he says. "Why don't we do both? You and I can go up, I grab a corpse, you grab a tray of cupcakes, and everyone's happy."
The blue men, still seated on the floor, murmur.
"Is that democracy?" someone asks. "What would John Brown say? Can we do both? Should we do both?"
Scribe stomps his foot.
"I've studied the texts," he says. "Our lives and freedoms are not at stake. Of course we should do both."
Another scribe frowns.
"I've studied the text as well, friend," he says, "and I think democracy might mean one or the other."
A third scribe nods.
"Well, we should vote again."
The blue men vote again, and again John Brown counts 16 hands and 16 hands.
The next thing we ought to do," says a scribe, licking his fingers and paging through the texts, "is we ought to have a debate. That's a process by which each side tries to convince the other side why his side is right."
"Right," says another scribe.
"That's exactly it. Each side should elect a minority leader."
"But how do we know which side is which? Democracy needs to be anonymous."
"That's right,
isn't it?"
says the second scribe.
"Democracy needs to be anonymous."
He pads over the texts, and then he says,
Scribe?
Scribe rubs his temples.
"Yes. We ought to blindfold ourselves somehow before we divide into sides, don't you think?"
"But what if John votes?" says Scribe.
"What?"
says the scribe.
"Yeah, Johns don't vote, I know, but what if this once we make an exception?"
The scribe pages through the old, tattered books.
"I don't know," he says. "Just this once?" says Scribe.
"It's not in the texts,"
says another scribe, squat in front of a book.
"I'm not sure I'm comfortable with it,"
agrees another.
"Johns aren't supposed to vote."
The blue men hold a vote. John Brown the Sixth says to the seated blue men, heads down, "May he who desires debate raise his hand." He counts the hands. John Brown the Sixth says, "May he who desires making an exception so that on this occasion, and this occasion alone, I, John Brown the Sixth, might cast a vote on the question of cupcakes versus corpses, raise his hand." He counts the hands. John Brown the Sixth says to the blue men, "There shall be a debate." A scribe stands up.
"Did we settle the question on if the debate ought to be anonymous?"
John Brown the Sixth motions for the blue men to lower their heads again.
"May he who requests an anonymous debate raise his hand," he says.
"And may he who requests a non-anonymous debate raise his hand."
And he counts, and he decrees, "The debate will be anonymous." The blue men move with their eyes squeezed shut to either side of the cave. Cupcake voters move right toward the fungal gardens. Corpse voters move left toward the crystal pools. Scribe, eyes squeezed shut, arms outstretched in front of him to avoid collisions with his brothers, makes his way left. John Brown the Sixth watches it all, frowning in a way that he thinks might emulate John Brown the First, age 12, watching a young man get beaten with a shovel. This conflict, he is sure, has capacity to end life as blue men know it.
"John,"
shouts someone from the right.
"We ought to disguise our voices, right?"
"We know that's you, fisherman, you cupcake lover," shouts someone from the left.
The blue men laugh.
"Yes, I suppose we ought to disguise our voices," says John Brown the Sixth.
Scribe turns his voice scratchier and lower and says to his fellow corpse voters,
"It really is all about retribution, isn't it? A blue man for a human. Simple math. They put a bayonet in our brothers and we never got revenge."
"Simple math, yes,"
says someone who's turned their voice shrill.
"And it would be good for the fungus."
"Oi," says someone else. "We ought to think about the fungus."
Both sides structure their argument and elect a speaker who stands before the group with eyes pressed shut. The cupcakes focus on nostalgia, sugar, the kindness of the baker and his sweet, soft hands, and how he died so young protecting them, and how he ought to be remembered in this way, cupcakes, forever. The corpses focus on vengeance, on their brother who had the courage to wander into their world and was slain for it, speared through his bare chest, and that they ought to spear a human through his chest just the same with the sharpened bones of their John Brown the First. The utility of it certainly is nothing to scoff at either. Corpses sustained their cave for decades after the apocalypse, and might do so again if they were sneaky about all this. The cupcakes rebut with a point on how they haven't had a corpse in 100 years, and they're doing just fine. The corpses rebut with the needs of the fungus. It's a lively day of festivities, and with their eyes squeezed shut, the blue men don't see the crescent lights blink away the hours. No one catches fish, and no one tends to the fungus, and as the stomachs of both sides grumble, nowhere seems to get hotter and hotter. Once both sides have made their points, John Brown the Sixth holds a second vote. The blue men move with their eyes shut back to the center of the cave and sit crisscross on the floor. They bow their heads. John Brown the Sixth tells the group, "May he who desires corpses raise his hand." John Brown the Sixth counts the hands. "May he who desires cupcakes raise his hand." John Brown the Sixth counts the hands. John Brown the Sixth announces to his constituents, "We are at an impasse." Eyes fly open and blue men jump to their feet, lips moving, shouts echoing, fists shaking toward the crack in the ceiling. John Brown the Sixth says, "Easy! Easy, folks!" And the blue men's shouts turn into whispers. Scribe stands beside him, hands on his hips. "We ought to just do both, John," he hisses. "We've talked that through, Scribe, and it's not the solution," says John. "Well, what now then?" says Scribe. Another scribe, still seated, stands up.
"I've looked through the text, friends," he says. "It appears at this point we should consider other methods of settling our agreement."
"What other methods?" scoffs Scribe.
"Well,"
says Scribe, avoiding eye contact.
"Yes?"
says Scribe.
"War."
The blue men snap their eyes to the front of the room, where John Brown the Sixth stands and frowns at the rope ladder, dangling from the roof of the cave watching them, passive like a ghost. Old rungs, colonized by little green mosses where the crescent of light somehow touches.
"War!"
shouts someone excitedly.
"War!"
says someone else, aghast.
"This seems a little much, John," says Scribe in John Brown the Sixth's ear. "We ought to exercise caution. We aren't many, and true war, as I've read about it, could devastate us."
John Brown the Sixth stretches his jaw, then says,
"Caution, sir? I am eternally tired of hearing that word, caution. It is nothing but the word of cowardice."
Which is what John Brown said once. The blue men make fists and raise them toward the ceiling. They turn to their neighbor to strike and don't. And then turn toward their other neighbor and lower their fists, and they look back at the front of the cave. A scribe says,
"I suppose it ought to be not anonymous now, huh? Who would need to know who to fight?"
An ancient waves his arms in the air.
"Hey, hey, everybody! I don't want war!"
"Oh gosh, sorry sir, I just assumed we ought to vote on the matter of the war, shouldn't we, John?"
John Brown the Sixth nods.
"Certainly," he says, lowering his palms parallel to the floor. "Certainly, if everyone could just sit back down."
Above the cave, it's raining. A Jersey Mike's employee on break in the boiler room stamps his cigarette out on the floor. And beside it, he spots a funny little hole in the foundation, shaped like the moon. And that was our story, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. If you thought that music was cool, so do I. It's a Grammy-winning vocal ensemble called Room Full of Teeth. They're badass, and their mission's to mine the expressive potential of the human voice. Check them out if you're interested. And if you like this week's story, check out our Patreon and consider becoming a member at patreon.com/drabblecast. Where else are you going to hear a story like that, folks? I mean, come on. We got the weird that's worth sacrificing your arms to make ladder rungs for. And we rely on your support to run the show. So if you got the means and the motivation, meander on over to our Patreon clubhouse. Otherwise, you can always write us a review, tell a friend, and spread the weird. We greatly appreciate it. Just like we appreciate this week's Drabblecast episode cover artist, Drabblecast art director, Bo Kier. Thanks, Brother Bo. Our program this week was brought to you by Nicole Leitner, Bo Kier, Jossie Gerwig, Sean Gentry, Wyatt Scott, Joe Beatrice, a Jersey Mike's employee on break in the boiler room, Bart Epstein, Pepper Lauderdale, Anna Rose, Mario Lovett, Timaeus Bloom, Lucas Stroff, and yours truly, Norm Sherman. Reminding you, that's democracy, isn't it?